That's my point.
The safety inspections deal with multifamily occupancies and commercial occupancies that have two or more dwellings. We have a few of those on Main Street. We've got several multifamily occupancies around town.
But how many of those are owner occupied? Do you know?
Well, multifamily is by definition is not does not it's a rental occupancy.
Yeah, but that's not always the case. Like, isn't there one up on Mechanic where the guy the people live in it? That three unit.
I don't know.
Down just down from the school.
Here's a good point. You know,
well, if you clarify, you could say all non-owner occupied.
I guess that's right. Thank you.
Buildings containing three or more.
I'm not very smart with words. Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
Oh, no, I mean that.
I mean that. I absolutely agree. Again, I'm looking at public safety, and I'm talking to the guy that I said earlier. Is living in Florida, renting out places, and doesn't give. You know, see it in all kinds of different towns.
Hasn't been absolutely. Here in 3 years.
So
just cashes the check.
And again, we're not coming in every time. That's why, you know, if it's once every 5 years. For these folks that aren't here, I think it's actually incumbent upon us to kind of make sure
if the owner doesn't live there,
correct.
It's a business.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
You expect more intrusions on a business than you do on your private home.
I don't like that word, but yeah. Thank you. Now, you have a question back there, Bruce? Do you have a question?
It wasn't to do with this. It was with some of the other stuff.
Okay.
When we get to that section,
yep.
I guess.
So. Okay.
So you want to add clarity in the section that specifies that the building is not owner-occupied?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's, I think, the intent of what we're looking to do is that somebody that, if I got a vested interest because I'm living downstairs and I'm renting it to three people upstairs, I'm going to make damn sure that the smoke detectors work and everything else.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, again, I don't want to make this any more onerous. I want to make the intent to be able to fix the issue that's there and not make it any more harder. Anything else? Thank you.
Section 9 deals with nuisances. That's dealt with in Section 601 in the current code. 9.1, a building, structure, or property that's in violation of any provision of this chapter is deemed to be a nuisance. A building, structure, or property identified as a nuisance is deemed to be a dangerous nuisance if it poses a risk of incapacitating injury or death for any person. 9.1.1, the CEO may determine that a risk of incapacitating injury or death exists if any of the following conditions is present or imminent. Number one, a structural failure. Number two, an explosion. Number three, a fire. Number four, a fire damaged structure. Number five, an electrical hazard. Number six, poisonous contamination or biological infection of water, air, or the physical environment. Number seven, a precipitous fall hazard. And number eight, catastrophic damage. Nine point two. Any identified nuisance condition is subject to enforcement in accordance with the provisions of Section 10. And Section 10 is the enforcement section. This is reflective of the enforcement section in Chapter 5. Comes out of 501.2. The only change is, well, first of all, Section 10.2 is new. It just clarifies how a CEO can enter a property legally to address a nuisance condition. That language is not present currently in the ordinance. And essentially it's saying you need permission from the property owner before you enter a property. And if you can't get permission, then you have to actually get an inspection warrant from the court. And 10.3 just outlines what a formal enforcement action includes. The document has to include certain provisions. And that's consistent with current requirements. 10.4 identifies that the notice of violation shall be delivered by first-class U.S. mail. Currently, it says first-class U.S. mail and certified mail. Certified mail certainly gives you the evidence. If they accept delivery, it gives you evidence that they've received the notice, but so does U.S. first-class mail. If it's not returned, then I'm told by attorneys that the court will accept that as evidence that they were served with a notice of violation by first-class mail. I have found in the past that by complying with the current requirements of sending it out by both certified and first-class, the certified is returned. So you've spent $7 or $8 for nothing, because they don't accept. They read the first class mail and don't bother to take the certified. And some people don't take certified at all anyway. So it comes back more often than not. And if it does come back, the recourse is to have it delivered by a local law enforcement officer or by a sheriff in accordance with the Maine Rules of Civil Procedure. 10.5, it doesn't specify how much time is allowed. It's typically 30 days, but there might be some situations where less time is justifiable to deal with an issue that needs to be taken care of rather quickly. And as currently provided for, an extension can be allowed if a reasonable hardship can be shown. 10.6 reflects existing requirements that the CEO can order occupants of any building or property that is deemed to be a dangerous nuisance to immediately vacate the building and not return until it's approved for occupancy. That's reflective of current provision in Chapter 5. The posting of a notice is also consistent with current requirements. 10.6.2, if action is not taken as ordered by the CEO shall cause the building or property to be secured. The only difference between this language and what's in the ordinance now is that it allows the owner 5 days to deal with a dangerous nuisance condition. In some cases, that might be okay, but in other cases, you might want to see something happen more quickly because of the extent of the danger to the public safety. So I didn't put any time frame in here. That would be a judgment call made by the CEO as to whether 2 days is needed or 10 days is okay. It's a decision made by the code officer. And then 10.6.3 about repaying all expenses incurred by the town, that's in our current ordinance. If you don't repay, a special tax can be assessed against the property. 10.7, in the event that a building demolition is ordered by the CEO and the owner fails to comply with the demolition order, the town council can take action. In accordance with Title 7, Section 2851, that's the dangerous building statute. The town council can actually go to court and ask for a judgment against the property with an order to demolish the building. And 10.8 just clarifies that the town attorney, with the assistance of the CEO, can take an enforcement action to court when authorized to do so by municipal officers. Any questions on that session? Next one deals with appeals. In our current ordinance, there's an appeal session, but the only recourse for a citizen to take an appeal is to go directly to Superior Court. This language allows an appeal to be taken to the local Board of Appeals. An administrative appeal of any decision, action, or non-action of the CEO can be taken to the Bucksport Board of Appeals, except that a notice of violation may not be appealed. That reflects the same limitation in Chapter 5.
And the reason we didn't put the Superior Court back in there is...
Well, you might have a property owner who's unhappy with a relatively minor issue that was brought to their attention by the code officer. Currently now the only recourse is to spend a lot of money. They've hired an attorney.
But they still can do that, correct?
They would need to first go through the local appeal process. Once you establish a local appeal process, then that has to go through, that has to happen first. If they're unhappy with the Board of Appeals decision, then yes, they would take it to court.
It doesn't say that in here.
And we're putting everything else in here. Can we put that back in here, too, just so folks can understand that they also have a right to go to court? And we're talking about putting everything here so they can understand it, but yet we got to take that out. And
okay, I'll add that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Section 12 is a section that's not in the ordinance right now. It's a waiver section. It's in the proposed Chapter 5 amendments, which you went through and approved. There's a waiver provision, and it's the same provisions here. Exactly. I'm going to suggest we add something when we get down through it. The CEO may grant a waiver of any specific requirement of this chapter, provided that no waiver has the effect of nullifying the intent and purpose of the comprehensive plan and this chapter. Number two, extraordinary and unnecessary hardships may result from the strict compliance with a requirement or there are special circumstances of a particular plan. And number three, the health, safety, and welfare of the public are protected. And the CEO may set conditions to any granted waiver as necessary to protect the purposes of the chapter. What we have on the other waiver section is what can't be waived. And I didn't put it in here, but I think it should be permits should not be waivable, fees should not be waivable, and any town council requirements that are applicable in this chapter should not be waivable. That would be the requirement of a bond or letter of credit.
And that's what we have in Chapter 5, correct?
Yes.
The NOTs?
Yes.
Can we just match that up with
yes,
this language here just to make sure that we're all...
And then Section 13, the last section, deals with definitions. There aren't any...
Can we add one?
What would you like to add?
What's the definition of
public safety hazard?
Public safety hazard. Because that's quoted in here quite often.
Yeah.
And there's no answer to it. There needs to be an answer to it.
Well, if you go back to Section 9, which talks about nuisances, this is really where you identify public safety hazards, and 911 lists those things that could constitute a public safety hazard. Structural failure, explosion, fire, so forth. Those are all things that are there because they would constitute a public safety hazard if they existed or they were imminent.
I'm fine with that, but then it needs to be in a definition of what that means, because we quote a public safety hazard in this policy, and nowhere does it say what a public safety hazard is. I'm fine with your definition of it, because I agree with that.
I'll just put it in. I'll put it in Section 13. That's doable. So we've gone through the entire proposed chapter. Did you want to go back and revisit some things that you were a little concerned about?
I think, you know, some of the things that we talked about as far as inspections,
you were hesitant about Section 614 and 615.
I was trying to figure out which where it was. There it was, yeah. The trees.
Trees and vegetated landscape.
I mean, under this, I got one on the back side of my property that fell down. Do I have to get rid of it?
Doesn't pose a public safety hazard when it's on the ground.
I don't think so. Go ahead, Mr. Stormzy.
So my thought is with that, too, is if you have, who's going to assess whether or not it's a public safety hazard? Do they have to hire an arborist to come in and tell you that the trees, or is that going to be charged by us, the town, or how do we know that the tree's rotting or it's got mold on it, you know?
It's going to be a case where you have visible evidence showing you've got a tree trunk that's split down the middle and one huge section of it is leaning precariously over a neighbor's house or whatever. You know.
I'm very big on, I talk to my neighbor, we make something happen. Without the town getting involved. I think we get involved in... That's just something that, in our present policy, we're not involved in. That would be civil.
If a neighbor's tree does damage to your property, mm-hmm. then the instant the public safety risk is over. Then it's happened. The accident has happened, and then your recourse is to file suit to claim damages. If you call me up and said my neighbor's tree is dangerously close to falling on my house and I'm worried about that, the only recourse you have in this case now is to talk to your neighbor. That's why I say that, you know, talk to your neighbor and see if you can work something out. But if you can't do that, then you have to hire an attorney. Go for it. Yeah. With this language here, you have a code officer that would attempt...
We become the attorney?
Attempt to... No, if I received a complaint, if this language was adopted and I received a complaint, about a storm damaged tree that somebody was worried was about to fall on their home. And when I looked at it, and it didn't appear to me that there was any damage or risk of danger, that would be the end of my involvement. Or, and if the owner wasn't satisfied with that, they could do one of two things. They could file an appeal. They believe I made an error in my decision. They can hire an arborist or a forester to evaluate the tree and get a professional opinion about the risk of that tree falling.
And then we can go to court.
If the owner, after hearing from me that I don't see a danger, and they went and hired an arborist, and the arborist said there is indeed a very real danger of that tree falling, they would provide evidence to me of that in writing, which would then support an enforcement action.
Right, and then we go to court for a civil...
If necessary.
Civil issue.
Yeah, well, there's several steps you have to go through. You have to file a violation notice. You give them time to comply. If they fail to comply, you have to come to the council to ask permission to go to court. So there's several steps you have to go through. And more often than not, when you go through the informal enforcement action, there's no need to take it to court because you can find other solutions to avoid having to go through that expense of paying attorneys and court fees. It's just like any other requirement of our town code. Those are the steps you have to go through. You start out asking for voluntary compliance. If it doesn't work, if it warrants going the extra step of formal violation, then you take that step and take that as far as you can.
Sue.
For the purposes of between neighbors, if you have a tree hanging over your house that belongs to the neighbor and you go see your neighbor and say, I think this is going to fall on my house, and they say, yeah, well, that's too bad. I do know that if you document by formally notifying your neighbor and providing a copy of that to your insurance company, that it gets subrogated out if something falls on your house and the damage gets repaired. Ben there got the T-shirt, but that's another civil recourse way that this.
I guess that's some of the heartburn that I have with it. I think we're trying to get involved in too much, and that's my opinion. If Peter and I are neighbors, if we don't get along, well, that's what I get a lawyer for. Okay, I don't have the town be my lawyer. Okay, because that costs the town money. Okay, it's my property. I have an issue with it. It should cost me money, not the town, not the town taxpayers. And that's my opinion.
Well, as you said, there's recourse within your insurance.
Right. I mean, there's way to deal with those issues without the town being involved in it.
Bruce,
there's times that you don't have to be.
I understand your major concern with your neighbor's house, etc. But you're also saying public safety. I own a mile of road, and I got a lot of trees. And they could drop in the road at any time. And can you come out and tell me you got that one, and that one? And you know what I'm saying? I mean, how do you know? I can show you a vine that fell last winter. It was healthy.
I think, and just from hearing things and where we don't have it already, and I don't see it being some huge issue, and there are other recourses. Let's just take those out. Not put them in there. It's again, we have something that we've operated with for 18 years, and by adding some more things to it that I just don't see where we're having the concern that's out there. If we had a mass of trees out there that were falling on everybody's property and everything was happening, I'm sure we would have heard about before this. So, but let's take these things out. Just take them right out and let's not deal with it. And
are you talking about both section 614 and 615?
Yeah. Because the vegetated landscaping. And that was the one that we, and again, I think if we put in there unoccupied residences, you know, because I think that was the major concern that we see, is that we can take action against, because if I have mowed my lawn for 3 weeks because I've been gone or I got a broken leg, I don't want to have the town coming to me and saying, hey, you know, hire Billy up the road to come mow your lawn. Again, the intent of what we're trying to do is to fix these things, whether it's a multifamily residence that's not being cared for properly, abandoned property that's just falling into disrepair. I think if we just keep it broad enough where we can target those folks that we're concerned about and not put the onus back on the folks of the town that are really trying to do everything the right way. We're not having the issues with it there. So let's, if we leave the vegetated one in there but indicate that it's abandoned properties or unoccupied properties that we're truly trying to target, I think is what we're trying to get at with that.
And the uncared for to the extent language in there would take quite some time to reach that level. You just described not mowing your lawn for a few weeks. In that time period, there's no way your vegetation would grow to the extent that.
And again, I use that as a piss poor example. I'm sorry for my language.
It's definitely not a you got to mow your lawn kind of thing.
I understand, but I also think that it's to the, again, I'm more concerned about the folks that aren't here taking care of their property than the folks that are living here trying to do the best that they can and not putting them to a point. Again, I think there's most people here don't see an issue with the folks that are living in town that have this. I think it's the folks that aren't here, that the towns that are dilapidated, the houses that are bad and gone and they're overgrown. Absolutely. Let's hold those feet to the fire. But I don't think this rule needs to be in effect for occupied folks.
With an occupied home, an insurance company is likely to raise an issue if it's a fire hazard.
Right.
You would think, like, they.
If you put in unoccupied properties after compact area, it would.
And again, this is only in the compact areas where we're talking about. We're not talking about my house, Paul's house, anybody's house that lives out in the backwoods that want
to. Unoccupied, I don't know if it's the right word to use. I think
I want the bushes to grow up around my house.
And maybe unoccupied isn't the right word.
I would prefer the word abandoned.
Abandoned. Yeah. So, and that's what I was thinking was abandoned. And I'm trying to figure out.
Abandoned isn't somebody went to Florida for.
Well, that's tough too. Yeah, no, you're right.
I think we're hard pressed to enforce it. I mean, I know in my job, I've tried to get a hold of. We've had people with abandoned houses get trashed. I mean, like, no copper, no, and everything. And we can't get a hold of who owns it. You know, and that's the hard part we have. And I mean, how do we hold someone a lot, you know, for it? I think that's a hard one. I agree with that one, the abandoned stuff, but that's going to be hard to enforce.
I think there are legal steps you can take.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we can just go to court, but it's going to be a pain.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
And as I said earlier, this is probably a section that's not going to be enforced that frequently because there aren't that many abandoned properties in the compact area that have reached the level of overgrown vegetation that you have a public safety risk. It's in here specifically because I had a complaint from a citizen who was concerned about the fact that their neighbor's property had been abandoned and been allowed to overgrown. And
absolutely, I think we ought to be able to have some way to take care of that. I don't want it to be the point where, like Mike said, my neighbors, I haven't mowed my lawn 3 weeks, they're going to call up and they're going to waste your time because it's not something enforceable, but you're going to get a call because they're mad at Mike for not mowing his lawn. And I think if we just specify that a little bit better, I think we're better off. And I don't know if you have the right word, Sue, which would go in there. Because abandoned, I don't know if it's the right word.
Unoccupied.
Well, unoccupied would need a period of time.
A time, whether it's more than 6 months or whatever the case is. Can we think about that word and maybe come back when we figure out what that word is? I don't know. I don't know if we're going to solve that.
It means that they're not. Nobody's lived there.
They're not maintaining it in a way that somebody. Yeah. I think we all know what the word is. It's just trying to figure out what that word is.
Mr. Morrison, did you have something, sir?
Yes. How many people here think they could come up with, though, let's say tomorrow, enough money to put a new roof on the house? Rhetorical question.
Yeah.
I don't imagine anybody's going to reach in their pocket and say, yeah, I got it right here, no problem, you know? If you do have it, you're probably not interested in putting it on your roof. Let's say a wind shear comes through here and rips about half the shingles off your roof, okay? Now you've got to come up with money for it. In the meantime, you're going to throw a tap on there because you're not going to be sitting drinking your coffee with an umbrella over your head. Just by right. You're going to have to do something. You don't want to leak in your house. But you call me up and I come in and I look at your room and I say, 10 grand. I'll put the roof on it for you. No problem. But now you've got to come up with that. You're going to be able to come up with it in a month, 2 months, 6 months. It's going to take you a year. You're going to neglect the rest of your bills so you can put a roof on your house. I think these rules and regulations on people for the condition of the house is no more than bothering somebody else for the looks of it or making the guy next door, his property isn't worth as much because your house is run down. I'm in a position right now where my health tells me I'm not going to be able to earn enough money over the course of the next year to put a roof on my house. I need one, but I'm patching it with whatever I can find. It may not look like what you want it to look like, but I'm happy in that. I don't have to drink my coffee with an umbrella over my head.
And again, these have nothing to do with looks.
These rules are arbitrary. They're enforced and put on the people who can't afford to maintain their home like the Joneses. I think that, you know, we're a pretty small town. We don't need to be pushing people around, having people have to abandon their homes, leave their homes because they can't afford to pay for anything.
Anything else?
Are you guys voting on this today?
Nope.
Okay.
Mike?
I got a question about the enforcement section. Is that brought forward or is that all new?
No, that's brought forward.
Everything that's written in there is what was in the old one?
The enforcement section.
There's some new added. So 10.2 is added. Just to clarify, what a CEO has to do in order to enter a property to inspect for a nuisance condition. That's not clear in the current ordinance. 10.3 lists what the content of a formal enforcement action needs to be. That's consistent with current requirements. 10.4, as I said earlier, current provisions require notice sent by certified mail and U.S. first class mail. The certified mail has been deleted. And 10.5, the one-time extension, that's current. 10.6, an order to vacate is current language. 10.6.1, in order to secure a dangerous property, that's current language. When I say current language, there might be rewording done, but the intent is still the same. 10.6.2 is out of current language, except, as I said earlier, the five-day allowance has been taken out. Now the time allowed is at the discretion of the code officer, depending on the severity of the issue. 10.6.3, the repaying all expenses, that's current. And 10.7 is not clearly addressed, but this reflects what is provided for by state law. The town council can indeed go to court. They actually can order through council action a building to be demolished, but there's also a provision where they can go to Superior Court and get a court order.
I didn't see any difference in the intent of what was written. I don't know if you had a question or concern, but would...
Well, I was trying to find the old section, and it looked like a lot of added...
It was like Jeff said, and it truly does not change the intent, but it explains it a little bit better than...
What's this like? 10.6.3, okay. Can you actually charge somebody and call it a tax on their home if they don't pay a fee? I mean, because you could take homes away if they don't pay their taxes. So I don't know if you can even legally do that, can you? Doesn't it have to be a fine or something?
Sue, can you address that?
The town has to have a judgment in order to do this, and it then can assess this, it's called a tax, against a property for the cost that the town incurred to clean up something that it was given a judgment to be able to clean up.
Okay, so you can call it a property tax then?
It becomes a part of your...
Because I know you can't take somebody's home away for not paying a fine, but I mean, you can take somebody's home away for not paying a tax.
This is real estate taxes, yes.
Yeah.
This isn't a real estate tax.
Okay.
But it's assessed against your real property. It's like a lien against it, is what it becomes. But it's not a real estate lien, which has an expiration date.
Right.
That results in foreclosure.
The wording is ominous, you know, for some people maybe. Maybe they don't agree with what you did to clean up their property or whatever, and they don't want to pay that fee, and you've got to take them to... I should think it should be a separate thing, not something you can add on to their tax bill, you know, and then say, well, you didn't pay your taxes, so, you know, we're gonna foreclose your home, you know.
Right. This one doesn't result in a foreclosure kind of action. It's not a real estate.
But it has to be cleared out if you sold it.
That's correct.
Yeah. Why do we take away the day someone gets to fix something? And then we meet it at your discretion.
The current language says, if the owner fails to secure their building or property within 5 days of receipt of said order, or when immediate action is required to protect public safety, the building inspector shall cause the building or property to be secured and shall take any other necessary protective measures, including but not limited to, you know, there's an option there. Either 5 days, or if immediate action is determined by the building inspector, then you need to take immediate action. So I didn't see a point in keeping both, because it's really, it's up to the discretion of the code officer if currently it's 5 days sufficient, or if you need to do something quicker than that. The same decision will be made under the current language. It could be 1 day, 2 days, 5 days, 10 days, whatever. You know, the code officer felt was a reasonable time period to allow the owner to take corrective action.
Anything else? Yeah.
Is 6372 3 and 4 are proposed new languages, just to add clarity about what constitutes a adequate screening for trash receptacles.
What's in there right now?
6373 is basically the language that's in there now. Talking about must be designed and installed to resist damage from the force of wind, remain stable.
But this is all regarding, this is in regard to waste containers.
Waste containers.
And specifically waste containers that are on the Route 1 Main Street are visible from the waterfront walkway.
Is that listed in there that it's for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jim, can you do me a favor? Do you have a red one? You know, it has the red, what's changed?
The second piece of this shows what was in there originally.
Page 11 on is the all existing language that's in Chapter 5 now.
Yeah.
And I've noted there where you find the provisions addressed in the proposed rewrite.
Perfect, thank you. I just want to be able to look through it again.
All right, we got a couple. Any other questions on this? Yep, in the back.
Yeah, just clarification. I understand it. When my house trailer goes vacant and I don't get somebody back, I've got to get rid of it.
No.
Because it isn't living.
No, it's.
Is it hooked up to plumbing and electric and all that?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a legally placed...
Yeah, we're talking about ones that are just abandoned, that aren't hooked up, that are sitting out, that don't...
Well, that was illegal anyway.
What's that?
That was illegal.
Right, it was just transferred over.
Yeah, and this was that...
One down,
correct. And that was just pulled over from the other, yeah. So you have a trailer that's not being rented or not being lived in, as long as it's still... Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then the other thing is, there was something about repurposing different pieces of machinery and stuff. I can't do that. I'm understanding it right.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
I forget what it was.
Some junk, they said.
Some junk, repurpose.
Yeah, repurpose. It's got to be the original intent.
Yeah, what if somebody's an artist? I guess they can.
Well, for example, I have got four or five 275-gallon drums I've cut in half so I can pick it up in my tractor, and I put my high end.
So those are serviceable. You're using it.
Yeah, but they're not being used for the original purpose.
But
That's a two-part requirement. The first part says that they're not maintained for their intended purpose, and they're in a state of decay, a serious state of decay.
Right. Yeah.
They're in decay. That's why they were taken out.
Right. But no, you're gonna take your.
I'm just saying, because I do a lot of that repurpose.
And I think somebody said, if you're an artist, you repurpose that stuff. It's still serviceable. It's being used for something else. This is, it's an old washing machine that's just absolutely 3 feet into the ground, and just the top of the ringers are showing, or something like that.
That's
how it could be. 146 of those are.
That it's working its way into the ground.
Yeah.
A key word in that session is no accumulation. Accumulation is the key provision there. And that's not defined. That's not quantified what is meant by that. But it's a judgment call again.
There's more than one. It
definitely more than one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way I was interpreting it, like that cattle, I keep my tractor in.
Yeah. From where I sit,
but to that's the garage to me. That's no way near.
This is, and again, it's interpretation. We got to have some trust in the folks that are doing the things here. That it's not a junkyard. You know, we're not going to go. I've got pieces of machinery and stuff that are no longer in use, and they're sitting there, and they got flowers and stuff growing up. If it's truly washing machines and junk and trash and everything else that's out there, that's what I think we all are all at least saying that. Yeah, we got to take a look at it.
I've seen not in this town, but in the past in other towns where.
Yeah.
One man's treasure is no
more. Absolutely agree. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Anything else on this? I think we've got some thoughts to talk about and some things to look at.
When is this going to come up by the council?
This is the first reading, but it's going to be passed to make sure that we have the changes that we've talked about tonight to come back into it. So we'll bring it back again.
We only have more people here at 7 o'clock meeting than you had at.
And it'll be talked about at the 7 o'clock as a first reading. There's no action being taken on.
It's not on for first reading tonight because, to be perfectly honest, I didn't think we were going to get through the whole thing tonight. And it's going back to.
We're going to have revisions as we talked about.
It's going back to ordinance at the next, and then it will be on the council for the first reading, which is the introduction where people can.
Thank you.
June-ish.
May 31st, actually.
Thank you. All right. Be done enough? Perfect. Next, and everybody all set? Good. Subdivision ordinance amendments. Jeff. I'll just start with, we've got a proposed amendment to Appendix C subdivision ordinance to correct a conflict with the state subdivision law to provide for the use of gravel roads and to update phosphorus control measures. And we have amendments in the changes that you're talking about.
Yeah, so the first amendment actually is on the second page. I included the entire section just for informational purposes, but the change affects Section 3.6. Leased dwelling units are not counted divisions if the planning board has determined the review requirements of Appendix K land use ordinance applicable to those units are at least as stringent as that required by subdivision law. There is similar language that used to be in the state statute for subdivisions, but it was removed. And now any subdivision is subject to planning board approval unless the municipality has been authorized by DEP to perform subdivision reviews, site plan reviews. So this is deleted from our subdivision ordinance to reflect the change in state law. Section 8.3, the section that deals with streets, this is language that was added as a result of a conversation I had with an owner of property out on Brewer Lake, accessed by Strickland Ridge Road and Old Winter Road, and he was contemplating doing a small subdivision of lots that had short frontage on Brewer Lake. Currently, in our land, in our subdivision ordinance, when you any road that's in a subdivision has to be paved, and he objected to having to do that, and possibly even having to pave the access roads, whether it comes in through Old Winter Road or Strickland Ridge Road. The planning board might be able to even ask him to pave those portions of the road to get to a subdivision. This language allows the use of a it refers to as a mineral surface, but it's typically a gravel road, that's does not intersect with a public way. And the example I'll give here is Strickland Ridge Road intersects with Bucks Mills Road, but the road that this that access this property intersects with Strickland Ridge Road. It does not intersect with a public road. He would like to be able to do a subdivision off that road and not have to pave that road. So this language here would allow that to happen. And there are other places around town, too, where you might conceivably have a road that intersects with a private dirt road, and a subdivision is proposed on that road.
Would it also allow a paved road into a subdivision and then gravel roads are from that?
Yeah. For what purpose?
For making a subdivision, you have the road going into the subdivision, but then you have fingers, other streets going off that main road. So you have a road going into a cul-de-sac, say, but then you have other roads that are now shooting off that road.
Well, the first section we're talking about deals with the use of a proposed street, not an existing street, so that doesn't intersect with a town road.
Okay.
So,
but Jeff, why does it need to? What's the difference if it intersects with a public road?
Well, because there's no change proposed in this ordinance to not require pavement for a proposed subdivision street that intersects with a town road. Royal Ridge is an example.
Mm-hmm.
That's a subdivision street that intersects with Central Street.
Yep.
That was required to be paved.
Yep.
That requirement will continue in this ordinance. The changes does not affect that. If you're going to build a street for a subdivision that intersects with a town road, you have to pave it.
So where Royal Ridge is now a town road, any road coming off from that has to be paved?
If it's for subdivision purposes, I would say yes. Yes.
Yeah. But we've talked before, can't we allow subdivision roads on a gravel road, on a private gravel road?
There's no exception currently.
That's what we're trying to fix here.
No exception currently in our ordinance that allows the planning board to waive asphalt.
Well, why can't we, if we're making changes to
that, why don't we do that?
Why can't we make that change also?
Well, you're doing it in effect, but it's not a blank waiver. It deals specifically with proposed roads that don't intersect with public roads and existing gravel roads that are proposed to access a subdivision. So,
yeah, but can't we take it one step further and say we'll allow ones that intersect if we want development?
If you're looking for the possibility that every subdivision coming down the pike from now on is going to have just a gravel road, then that's the change.
My concern with that, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, is what we've talked about with the other one, with public safety access.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have, by having that paved road, it gives you a little better access into the subdivision from there. If it's a gravel road to start, sometimes, you know.
Yeah, but you can make the gravel road to town standards.
Sure.
And that's what this language clarifies. It clarifies that the second section says the board may approve the use of an existing private road finished with a mineral surface to provide access to proposed subdivision, provided that the road is improved to the extent necessary to comply with the requirements of Chapter 10 roads and streets, and to comply with an approved stormwater management plan for the subdivision. So, I use Strickland Ridge Road as an example. If somebody wanted to put lots on Strickland Ridge Road, create a subdivision, then that language would allow Strickland Ridge Road to remain a gravel road, but it would need to be improved if necessary to bring it up to town standards.
Let's go back to Royal Ridge. So if Royal Ridge wanted to expand and he wanted to run another road, say another 30 acres, wanted to run another road out there, that would have to be paved.
Yes.
Why can't we make this so it's all, I think it's what we're looking at, is that we can make that a gravel road to town standards in that existing subdivision? Because we're saying we can do it now for all new subdivisions, is the way I'm reading this, correct?
No, not if they intersect with the town road.
All new subdivisions intersect with the town road has to be paved.
If you're building a road, yes, that intersects with the town road, as it's currently provided for, you have to pave that road.
Even if it's a private road? Because it...
Yeah,
I understand that
vision. Right?
That's the way we do it now. You have to do it to town standards and pavement.
Royal Ridge was a private road till we took it over.
That's right.
And I'm saying, why can't we do subdivisions on private roads built to town standards with gravel as opposed to pavement? Because nobody's going to make any money if they've got to put pavement on there, and it's going to prevent them from doing it.
This language allows that.
But not on a public road, not back to a public road.
Well, yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
See, that's where I was okay. confused, because I think it does. That's the way I understand it. I think we're all on the same page. It's just listen to what it says.
The second provision deals with existing private roads, whether they intersect with a town road or not.
Yeah, but then what if you want to build a new road?
If that new road intersects with a town road, it needs to be paved. The scenario that I'm talking about is deal with in section 8311, where
existing
you
ground.
have a proposed street that intersects with a private road, not a public road. And this section would allow that proposed street to be surfaced with gravel and not be paved.
But, I mean, like, in the past 10 years, most of the subdivisions we've seen in this town have been 200 feet on a paved road, because that's the way nobody's going to develop in behind there.
Right.
And it would seem like the way you're going to get them to develop in behind there is to allow a gravel road.
You know, if I got 100 acres on Jacob Ock, which I don't, wish I could, and I want to put a subdivision on there, I got to build a pavement road.
You can't make any money.
If it intersects with Jacob Ock Pond Road, yes, you have to pave that road.
Well, yeah, my subdivision road is going to be better than the main road.
I think what we're looking at is to say, if we're going to build a subdivision, regardless of where it is, it's allowed to have a gravel road.
To yes. town standards. That's what I think we should standards. Allow.
So, yes, so to encourage development. If that's your preference, if you want to be able to, the planning board to be able to say, or the ordinance can say that, no pavements required, period. And let that decision be made by the subdivision developer if they want that road to be accepted by the town.
As long as I understand that to be accepted by the town, it would need to be paved. It would need to be constructed to town standards, and it would need to be paved.
For us to maintain it.
That if the town were to accept it.
Yes.
And that's fair.
But right? just to have a subdivision.
I think it just encourages you to develop on a road, because that's the only place you're going to do it, and all the backland just sits there.
So if I understand you correctly, what you'd like this ordinance to say is that a subdivision road, whether it's on an existing gravel road or a new proposed road. I'm in trouble.
Guys, gonna keep it down, please.
Whether it's if the subdivision is proposed on an existing gravel road or a newly constructed gravel road, no pavement's required. Unless the subdeveloper would like the road to be taken by the town, then the road would need to be built to town standards, but only as far as gravel.
Correct. My language is any new subdivision being proposed only needs to have a gravel road built to town standards, and if they want the town to maintain the road, then it needs to be paved to town standards, I guess is the word.
Yeah, it's an unaccepted road unless paved.
Yeah. And some people won't mind a private road that's gravel.
No.
A lot of communities have subdivisions like that.
Most of the ones that are off the beaten path that are...
Because otherwise everybody's going to looking for a gravel road to tie into.
Interesting. I have a list of roads that dead end, and I got this. I asked Jay for it because I was looking at the problems that we have to back out of a lot of roads that dead end with no turnaround, because there's no turnaround and fewer people want you turning on their property. And so I asked for a list of, and you're exactly right. We have these straight things that go into dead ends and stop and don't provide a turnaround. I need to look at what the...
Could we make a requirement that you have to have a cul-de-sac if there's going to be a dead end?
There needs to be something, or maybe this will help to...
But
we have like 20 that dead end that the Public Works is backing out or turning it. That's correct.
Like Kenny Drive and all those.
Yeah. And so that's an offshoot.
So you understand
what you're talking about, all these things that just go and stop?
Yeah.
So I think the proposed language here doesn't need to be in there. This can be addressed in section 831 in the existing ordinance. Proposed streets must comply with the requirements of Chapter 10 roads and streets, except for asphalt paving.
We already have the requirements in there for a subdivision road. We just pull out that they need to be asphalt paved.
Well, from Sue's concern, it sounds like we maybe either need to address it needs to have an entrance and an exit, or a cul-de-sac.
Or a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think that...
Are those subdivisions? Is that what those are, too? Those are approved subdivisions?
They're old subdivisions, like Kenny Drive, where it just went to a dead end, and there's nowhere to turn around.
Okay.
That if they're, you know, in the creation of a street, either has to be a through street, or has to have a cul-de-sac.
Right, so chapter 10 actually includes a requirement for a T-turn, turnaround, or... So that would need to be met on a proposed subdivision street.
And maybe with these other ones now, if the rules are backed off a little bit, maybe they'll develop a little bit or do something there.
Yeah, well, I told, now that I've got the list, I'm looking at the what the town accepted, and if there's room at the end, I may be coming back with a proposal that
to do that,
we put some T's or turnarounds, just so that we're not... backing in or driving over private property.
So I get the gist of what you want to do. I'll come back with you with some new language.
Please.
The last change deals with just simply updating the manual that deals with stormwater management. It refers now to a manual that was revised last in September 1992.
Right.
There's one now from 2011. So
that's and looking at the numbers didn't change up or anything.
No, it's
just
changing.
It's just changing what it is. Okay. All right, Jeff, we're going to stop there. I think people need to take a break before we get going for the meeting. Appreciate it. We'll come back with the fees and Appendix K changes, and I think the Chapter 13 stuff for we'll make sure we schedule that for the next meeting. So we'll bring that ordinance, Chapter 13, back up again at our next meeting on the 31st. So.
And the change on Appendix K, by the way, is on the agenda, but it's currently it's going through the planning board process right now. They're going to hold a public hearing. They've done their first reading. They're going to hold a public hearing at their next meeting in June.
Okay.
And you're certainly welcome to attend and listen to the discussion about the changes there. As you may recall, with the charter change now, recommendations for amendments to Appendix K go directly to the town council from the planning board.
All right, this won't take a adjournment.
Motion.